Ars Electronica 2008. A new cultural economy.
So, next up we have Terry from the U.S., from Colorado. And you have to remember, there's a lot of different styles that were presented when we were judging the panel submissions. And one of the beautiful things about this is the radical and sheer beauty of all of the different kinds of materials that were submitted. So what you're going to be hearing is a piece called Core Sample that Terry's been working with. And I guess while she's setting up, you have to remember the interface in digital media is something that's very important right now. And I think a lot of people have been thinking about how to engage that. In the 20th century, you had musics like jazz. But if you imagine the jazz without the saxophone's only been invented a century plus. But could you make music for a saxophone if it didn't exist yet? Or if that's the musical interface and you're thinking about it as a composer, what are you going to do if that instrument doesn't even exist? And that's what I found very compelling about the Reactable group, is that they're essentially making software that can be any instrument. What Terry's going to be showing is material that she's been working with. You ready yet? Or okay. And she'll jump in.
Is that going to pop up onto you? Okay, great. Thank you very much. I also wanted to thank Ars Electronica, the whole jury, and the people who I worked with on this project, Michelle Fornaby, architect, and sound designers Ian White and Peter Segerstrom. And most of all the people who dare to walk. Actually, my works are very demanding. You need to go usually to a remote location, sometimes spend hours walking, and sometimes enduring harsh weather. So I'm very grateful to the community that's been built up around this work. As Paul said, I'm from Colorado originally, so the mountains were my first inspiration in working with landscape as a compositional palette. But I am currently at the Rhode Island School of Design, where I'm the head of the digital media department, and I also enjoy a community rich with artists and designers from many different backgrounds there, who I'm very grateful to. But I wanted to give some context here before I present the documentation of Core Sample. You may have noticed it's not in the exhibition, and that's partly, I think, a comfortable thing for me because I've always felt a kind of tension around having the video documentation stand before the work itself, especially because my practice is very site-specific. So in offering you a bit of context before I move into that part of the presentation, I also wanted to address, as my bio states, I'm a landscape artist, and I've adopted that term. I was originally trained as a sculptor and painter and started working with digital media 15 years ago. And most recently have come to think of myself as a landscape artist in a new context. And it's important to me to distinguish from what that typically implies as a kind of pictorial or painterly tradition or a concern for the picturesque. And that's what leads me to sound. I actually link back to a definition of landscape that J.B. Jackson, landscape historian, traced through an etymology that goes back to the German Landschaft or Landschaft, that is shaped land made by man, and also the more broader meaning of a system, an organized system overlaid upon the land. So when you look at the landscape, it's really not necessarily this pictorial thing framed by your point of view, but rather it's a whole system of operations. And in my own thinking, I've kind of extended that to a notion of what I call network landscapes that encompasses the wireless networks that are surrounding us every day and interpenetrating the landscape and framing the landscape just as much as sound, as technological networks, social networks, and natural networks all are interpenetrated in that term. So in thinking of that, I have the image above the images of the NASA satellite tracker that you can look at online. I've worked with GPS for the past 10 years, and I think of GPS as part of this kind of Hertzian spectrum. It's obviously a technology that works with radio transmission, and therefore exists as a kind of continuum with sound. I think of these media as being very simpatico in a sense. But this image is also important to me because it reflects how we begin to see ourselves in the landscape, or what position we believe we hold within the environment. And that's a question that has run through my practice since at least 1995, when I first began working with GPS in this way. But there is a long history, and I'll look at that in a moment, but as I come to the current moment and think about this spectrum, I'm very interested in using the medium of radio transmission as a way of bringing the body into a kind of extended relationship to across subject and object. So really, my hope in creating sound installations of this kind is to fully immerse the body and actually create a kind of identification with place, understanding place as a kind of person or people as places. But we do live with a long history when we think about how we envision ourselves in landscape. And in some instances, we may place ourselves in landscape in relation to a religious paradigm. Or perhaps we use images such as this one by George Innes to justify industrial expansion and to create a rhetoric of a kind of harmony between industry and nature. And more contemporary responses to the post-industrial landscape may imply a kind of retreat. And this is also a kind of, the image on the left is of a suburb, and of course the image on the right is World of Warcraft, but this is also a kind of retreat that's based in a logic of containment and control, albeit concealed. But when mobile technologies have now become proliferate, there's a rhetoric of a kind of freedom to roam, a kind of going back into public space, oftentimes used in a kind of uncritical way, that term. But this image is of the real-time Roam project from MIT's Sensible City Lab. And it's actually an indication of cellular phone traffic over a 24-hour period of time in the city of Rome. And while it, in one sense, represents a kind of imaging of ourselves in landscape, it's a very corporate image. It's one that's actually contained and confined to those subscribers to Itaú Telecom, which sponsored the project. So in my own work, this rhetoric of a kind of freedom to roam becomes really operative because I use GPS, a technology that has military origins. An earlier piece that directly questioned this kind of logic of functional and efficient movement, the kind of notion of the target versus the itinerary, was a piece called Drift that was presented at the Cuxhaven Kunstverein. And in this work, the sounds which would play back as you move through the landscape, your movement being sensed by the GPS, the sounds themselves were drifting with the tide so that they would be displaced on a regular basis. You couldn't actually go out and find them. You had to kind of surrender yourself to wandering in a landscape that itself was relatively undifferentiated, and also presented the threat of an incoming tide that might isolate you on a sandbar. So the current piece, Core Sample, which has been recognized this year, is set on an island in the Boston Harbor, and it's an island that has a very mixed and varied history. It's currently a landfill park, having served the city of Boston as a dump for over 100 years. It supported almost village of people who worked in those industries, either in horse rendering plants, a kind of a 19th century equivalent to scrapyard of automobiles. There were also grease extraction plants and other kinds of early forms, if you want to think of them as recycling industries. And people lived on the island. Prior to that, there were also colonists who settled and harvested and also grazed their cattle on the island. And prior to that, of course, Native Americans used the island for hunting and fishing. So there's this very kind of contested nature to this landscape that eventually became so toxic that it was closed in the 1950s and made inaccessible to the public. So when it was redesigned as a landfill park, it was actually landscaped and engineered as an almost entirely artificial landscape. They capped the toxins with excavation from the tunnel project in Boston, which was a big 10-year project. And they capped the island in some places with 60 feet of this excavation, and then built a scientifically formulated layer of loam that would support plant life, and shipped in over 28,000 shrubs, trees, and plants that were then landscaped. And you are presented then with an island that looks quite idyllic, if not pastoral, and very non-threatening. Yet you can see off in the distance and all around and on every horizon the city of Boston and its industrial excess, the sewage treatment plant, the shipping transit, and also just the kind of lingering knowledge that Boston's harbor was one of the most polluted in the U.S. for many years. So confronted with this landscape and the notion of, you know, how to make this place, this person known to an audience that would come to walk and listen, I felt the need to kind of pierce that layer of idyllic beauty and suggest something as if you could sink through the layers of that island and hear those material and cultural pasts as you move along. So there is a relationship between where you are on the path and the elevation and the material sound reference that you hear. And the mapping is rather loosely, as again, there are two hilltops, so there's an elevation relationship here, and the thematic of the sound changes as you change elevation. But within that, there's also 250 sound regions of varying sizes, some 3 feet in diameter, others a quarter mile, that are all layered on each other in such a way as to create transitions across these different domains. So the process of composing is actually kind of painterly, but it's also a sculptural, large-scale design problem, and then, of course, a music and sound compositional question. There was also the desire to connect this landscape of the island back to the inner harbor, to the city skyline. So at the Museum of the Institute of Contemporary Art in Boston, there was a brand new building by Diller and Scofidio that was just built at the shoreline. So the opportunity to use this viewing deck space as a way to kind of bring people into dialogue with what they're seeing as the island sits on the horizon was another moment where I could maybe bring attention to the knowledge that this is not just a beautiful landscape that you're gazing at, but it's also a very working, industrial, and layered technological, social, cultural space. So the railing itself is the piece, the sculptural element that had sound emanating from it, and it's meant to evoke this similar idea of a core sample as if taken from the island. And as you move down the corridor and interact with the railing, you begin to hear these sounds that evoke that are relative to the kind of thematic from the island composition. So it's a very different, the island itself has a topographical composition to it, and then in the museum you have a very linear, reduced representation of that space. So let me move, if I can, please, to the video documentation. Thank you. course, it never happens in the pre-run.
Thank you.
So thank you. I'll take questions afterward. But just as you may recognize, this was just a sample of one journey. Any journey would be creating a different sound composition based on where the person chose to walk, as the GPS is kind of triggering the sound playback. And some elements also included voice, very minimally, but there were voices, people I interviewed who had lived on the island, had worked on the island, people who were experts in landfill technology and described those processes, and also people who had worked in the trash recycling industries and described those processes as well. Thank you.
So, does anyone have any questions? No? Okay. Well, next up we have a gentleman from the European scene. But I want to kind of comment a little bit on linking some of the projects so that everyone gets an idea of a common ground. Now, John Cage wrote one of the first pieces that used turntables in 1939. It was called Imaginary Landscape. And if you think about it, the audience walked into a room and there were just turntables on the stage playing frequencies. And the audience was very pissed off because they felt there was no band. And this is 1939. So whether it's the reactable group or the core sample scenario, what you're seeing is a critique of the interface, how people look at social processes and creativity, how new kinds of composition can even come from the use of satellite frequencies and GPS signals. So there's a lot of different strategies going on in the room, and that's what I'm hoping we all kind of can support this kind of art, because it's a blur between what we think of as music and what we think of as contemporary art or installation, but it also applies to what the modern landscape is, which is, you know, frequencies, different kinds of digital pattern recognition, and so on. So next up we have Hans from Germany, and Hans, you ready? Okay, so he's going to get into his piece.